The Mace Finnegan and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. And we are presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Willie Donick, Adam Vingan here with you. Scott from Shelbyville on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says, "My heart is so full. Talking hockey, even though you were all going to put it on the shelf for the summer, my day is made." Well, we have a unique opportunity this week. Willie and I are on earlier. Derek's been out. He will be back today with Jake Lyman from 3 to 6, filling in for Jared. So you have two hockey lovers, two hockey nerds here. Good opportunity to sneak in some hockey talk before Titans training camp starts next week.
Right, because we know that this is really one of the last pieces of business, barring a big trade, and that I think that's the other storyline to watch. Is with the trade of Colton Sissons, there's a hole in the center position at a position that already was thin. Now it's even thinner. So we feel like there's a move coming there. And then the other guy that they've got to sign is Luke Evangelista. Once we get into August and you get those things done, the Predators talk is going to be at a minimum until mid-September when they open camp, right? So they're going to fade off, but this is like the unfinished business of the summer that is significant.
Yes. So Luke Evangelista, a restricted free agent, still needs a new contract. Do not worry, Predators fans, especially female Predators fans who love Luke Evangelista, pretty boy Vincenzo.
We got to call it like it is.
With his big hair and his Gucci belt. He will sign a contract. He will be a member of the Nashville Predators next season, barring something completely unforeseen. But it is interesting to attempt to figure out what that contract is going to look like. So again, AFP Analytics, a site that I rely on heavily at this time of year, projects that Luke Evangelista will sign a two-year contract with a cap hit of roughly $2.5 million per season. So total value around $5 million. On paper, I would say that is fair value for Luke Evangelista.
2.5?
2.5, based on what we've seen so far in his career.
And I think the negotiation will start lower because it wasn't a great second year. And he only had 32 points. And as we said, those numbers are buoyed by a good surge of games late in the year, which is not insignificant, but at the same time, it was kind of after the horse was out of the barn. You would have loved to have seen better production in the meat of the season when they were still fighting to get some traction going. That being said, the numbers are the numbers, and you introduced a comp to me that I had not thought of that is going to probably give you a little more fuel for the Evangelista camp trying to get something higher than the 2.5. Because I think something around 1.8, 1.9 for 2 years is sensible. And that's about a 250% raise if you got to like 1.9.
So here's what I did. I looked at players who have a lot of the same characteristics as Luke Evangelista. Early 20s, play on the wing, restricted free agent. I looked at deals that have been signed over the past 6 weeks, since June 1st. I don't know why I specifically picked that date, but it gave me more choices. And a player, as I was scrolling down the list, a player who popped out to me is Jack Quinn. Jack Quinn plays for the Buffalo Sabres. He was the 8th overall pick in the 2020 NHL draft. He's played parts of 4 seasons, one of which was shortened by injury, but his 3 full NHL seasons, he had 14 goals and 37 points in 75 games in 2022-23. In his injury-shortened season, he had 9 goals and 19 points in 27 games. So still an impressive production rate in a short amount of time. And last season, had a career-high 39 points, 15 goals, 24 assists in 74 games. Jack Quinn, last month, signed a 2-year contract with a $3.375 million cap hit. Now, when you look at the production of Quinn in his career versus Evangelista in his career, pretty similar. Quinn has played 178 NHL games. Evangelista has played 172. Quinn has scored 39 goals. Evangelista has scored 33. Quinn has 97 points. Evangelista has 86. So that's just the bare minimum, looking at some comparisons. You can dig even deeper. But just on the surface, similar production over the course of their young careers. So if I'm the Predators, or excuse me, if I am Luke Evangelista's agent, I am looking at a player like Jack Quinn and saying, similar production, he's making nearly $4 million per year on his next contract. So why shouldn't Luke be making nearly $4 million
per season? He's making nearly $4
million? 2 years with a cap hit of 3.375.
All right, so 3.37.
Okay, sorry. I saw this, maybe a little dyslexic there. I swapped the 7 and the 3.
Right.
So 3.375.
3.3. Excuse me. I think when we get into that, that's going to be a key. Because I do think that's going to be a comp, 3.3. To me, that would be the high end, right? I don't think Evangelista is getting any more than Quinn. Fair?
Fair.
In fact, his production is a little bit less. And so $3 million, to me, is close to the ceiling. And some people, I think, and I think myself included, would say that's a little rich for what Evangelista has done. $3 million a year. But remember,
the cap is going up.
The cap is going up. $3 million now is not what $3 million was 2 or 3 years ago, let alone 5 or 6 years ago. So what do you do? To me, this might linger for a while, what they do. And even the going rate of a two-year deal wouldn't be a slam dunk, would it? Some years, Evangelista could say, give me 1 year and bet on myself. Or the Predators might say, look, Luke, this is a big year for you. We got a lot of people coming up the pipeline. We have a lot of players going into the last year of their contracts. And so we're going to offer you a one-year deal. I can see either side playing it that way. So I don't know if it's a slam dunk, but I do think the going rate for players of his ilk, the sensible thing might be 2 years. But 2 years, if I'm Barry Trotz, is going to lower the per year. Because I'm guaranteeing you 2 years and not one. Because I do think Evangelista could go, his career could go south, but his career also could go north. I think the Predators would be smart to go 2 years, but I think if you can get him for under 2.5, I think that would be the compromise. For me, because he's going to have a huge opportunity. They need for players like Luke Evangelista to seize jobs a la Craig Smith, right? Any good team has to have some homegrown guys that are giving you production. And Evangelista can be a 40 to 50 point consistent scorer, I think, year in and year out, if he's right.
One texter says, Evangelista is not the answer. Sign him great, sign him cheap, great. Lose him to another team, great. Just do not continue to overpay for underperforming players. Now, this is different than signing Steven Stamkos or Jonathan Marchessault or someone like that. Luke Evangelista is a younger player. The contract is going to be short term. It's right. Going to be a prove it type of deal. We'll give you a raise. We'll give it to you over 2 years. You show us that you're worth more. You show us that you are worth a long-term investment. So,
and he still will be restricted at the end of a two-year deal.
He should be, yes. So I don't see it in the same way the texter does. Like, I don't think, even if you overpay Luke Evangelista, it's a drop in the bucket compared to what you're paying some of your other players. So again, the projection is around a $2.5 million cap hit. April in Portland says, I wouldn't pay him over $2 million per year.
I think most Predator fans would probably fall closer to that based on the recency bias of his struggles last year.
But again, it depends on what kind of player you think Luke Evangelista can be. As I've said, I think his ceiling in the NHL, again, a different player, but in terms of production, I think his ceiling is Craig Smith. Craig Smith was a productive member of this team for a long time. Since he left the Predators, he's bounced around quite a bit. It's actually quite impressive. He went to Boston, then he was traded to Washington, then he was in Dallas for a season. Last season, he started in Chicago and was then traded to Detroit. So Craig Smith still going strong, I guess, at age 35. He'll be 36 in September.
But since the Predators have let him go to free agency,
he hasn't been the same player.
Right. I think they did they made the move at the right time. But when they signed him to the second contract, I don't know if there was a third contract in there, but they got exactly what they were hoping to get.
It wasn't because he went to free agency.
Right.
So they signed him to, I believe, a five-year contract out of arbitration.
Okay.
He played out that contract.
So after his entry level?
Yes.
It was a five-year deal?
Or was there maybe a small
one in between?
I'll have to take a look. But Craig Smith, to me,
I do feel like there was arbitration in there.
There was. So he played on a two-year deal with a $2 million cap hit from 2013 to 2015. Then had a five-year contract with a $4.25 million cap hit.
Right. So that was a really good run. David Poile finding him in the second round and getting that, the production he got for that number was really, really solid. Now, remember, $2 million a year back then, $2 million a year now, not comparable. But you see what I'm saying. It's a second-level contract. You're not breaking your bank signing him. And even if they pay a little bit more for Evangelista, in today's rising salary cap where you're still trying to recalibrate what everybody's going to make, they have plenty of room to give him a few extra bucks. That's why I think it's going to be a unique situation. Because last summer, with a lot of these guys, it was like, hey, look, this is all we got left. We just signed these three big free agents, and we don't have much money left under the salary cap. You got to take what we're offering. And the player had to sort of take it or leave it. Now, you can't really use that because they've got enough cap space to give him an extra $500,000 or an extra $2 million over 2 years, right, if they wanted to.
But my point about Craig Smith is, over a six-year period between 2013 and 2019, he scored 24 goals, 23 goals, 21 goals. He had a down year. 1 year, he had 12 goals. But then he bounced back to 25 goals and then 21 goals. So 5 out of 6 years, in his mid to late 20s, he scored 20 goals every season. And if 5 out of 6 seasons in that case, if Luke Evangelista can become what Craig Smith was, again, different player, I'm just looking at the production. If Luke Evangelista becomes a, whatever happens during the course of the season, by the end of it, if he stays healthy, he's going to end up with 20 goals. That is valuable. Again, he's not the game-changing winger that Predators fans desperately want and crave, but there is value in having a second or third line winger who you can count on to score at least 20 goals. And that's what I think Evangelista's
I don't think he is an at least 20 goals, but I do think he is a 15 to 20 goal and more assists than Craig Smith, which is, at the end of the day, it's about the same point production. But here's the key. It's at that price tag, right? It's, you're not overpaying for those numbers. And if anything, because you control the player who's younger, you underpay, which gives you more cap space to go get the guys in free agency or in trade that you can pay big. Or you can afford the big-name players that you want to sign long-term. Your Roman Josis, presumably the next wave of guys that you have. You got to hope that you have those guys. But those players are valuable. The Evangelistas, the Craig Smiths, the guys through the years. Victor Arvidsson was one of these guys for a long time, right? Who they got locked up at a younger age, and he overproduced based on what they were paying him for a while, right? I'm looking at some other guys that David Poile had success with. Cali Yarncroak would be another one, right? You need guys like this who don't break the bank, who give you steady production over a good while. True?
Yes. I'm looking back at Cali Yarncroak's game log. He was a consistent 30-point player. 30 points, 31 points, 35 points, 26 points, 34 points.
Right, and he was valuable in that he could play center, could play wing.
He played on every line. Every position on every line.
And
Evangelista's
not
going
not
to do that
guy. Yes. He's not that guy. But I think in a general sense, your second wave guys who don't cost you a lot but help you win, you need those guys. And with the prospect pool they have, quite honestly, I think there's going to be more of those guys than your high-end studs. But if you have several low-cost, steady players, then you have the resources to go get the big guns, right, when they become available.
So let's end this here. What would be the contract you would be most comfortable giving Luke Evangelista right now?
The most?
The most that you would be comfortable giving him right now.
I think the most would be right at $3 million.
Per season or overall? Like 2 years, $3
million? You said
or?
The most. 2 years times three okay. would be the highest I would go.
So a $3 million cap hit over two seasons.
Two times three. And I don't think they would go that high.
No. I'm going to go with what AFP Analytics says. I think 2.5. I think 2.5 is my ceiling.
And I think the sweet spot to me, because remember, 1.9, if my math is correct, or the 1.9 would be a 250% raise on what he's made, right? But you got to give him credit for what he's done the last 2 years. He's been a good player, as disappointing as last year was. And his career could go different ways. I think the sweet spot would be about 2.2. Still a really substantial raise, but also if he does hit another level, then he's a really good buy for 2.2. Times 2.2.
One texter says $1.5 million per year for 2 years. Again, I think that would be reasonable as well.
It would be reasonable, but he's
I'm not his sure he's comps going to
with
that.
With the way the salary cap is going up, I think we're going to have to. I think Barry Trotz is going to have to look and say some inflation here is going to equal more dollars. I think 1.5 would have been dead on in the old cap that wasn't going anywhere. Remember, we got used to looking at a cap that wasn't rising.
Right.
Now it's gone up, and it's going to keep going up.
Yes. So we will keep you posted on Luke Evangelista again. Don't worry, Predators fans, especially those of you who have Tiger Beat posters of Luke Evangelista on your wall. Do they still make Tiger Beat magazines?
I don't know. Do they have magazines?
They do have magazines.
It's not that many.
They still have magazines. So that is true. But don't worry, Predators fans. I think it's going to be...
Does Luke's fan base read magazines?
No. They're all on TikTok.
Yeah.
They don't read magazines. They don't read magazines. I still love a good magazine. 615-737-1025. I'm looking forward to this conversation. Coming up next, our old friend Elijah Campbell, who used to work here at 102.5 The Game, a former producer of Willie Donix here at 102.5 The Game. He is now the co-host of The Early Game on 107.5 The Game in Columbia, South Carolina. He is live at SEC Media Days. Elijah will join us coming up next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donix, Adam Vingan, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. D. Mace Vingan and Donix, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Willie Donix, Adam Vingan here with you. By the way, Byron on our text line says, the Food Lion by our house has a pretty massive magazine selection, and about a third of them are literally Taylor Swift magazines. So magazines still do exist, Willie Donick.
That warms my heart. I have to say, I don't read as many as I used to.
I love a good periodical. I'm a big periodical guy.
Yeah.
So, Chase and Big Joe are at SEC Media Days. It wraps up today. Our coverage is sponsored by Brewhouse South. Experience Nashville's ultimate sports and brew hangout at Brewhouse South in Cool Springs. And we are pleased to be joined by an old friend. Some of you may remember Elijah Campbell, a former member of our family here at 102.5 The Game. He is now the co-host of The Early Game on 107.5 The Game in Columbia, South Carolina. He is live at SEC Media Days, and he joins us now. Hi, Elijah. How are you, buddy?
Oh, hey, guys. It's Gameception here right now.
Absolutely.
It's so good to be back. Oh, it's good to hear your all voices. I popped in at the end of that last segment. I was like, you know, I want to listen in for a little bit. Hear how you guys are doing.
You look like a grown-ass man now. You've got a full beard.
Yeah. The hair's still long, too. I mean, you're looking right now. I got it up in a bun. I have, you know, doing mornings.
Now he's got a man bun, everybody.
It's hit or miss if I want to, you know, completely shower and wash my hair in the morning. And this morning I just wasn't feeling it. I was just beat. So I'm like, no, it's a hair up day. Putting the hat on, but you know, the beard is in full. I really couldn't grow this bad boy until like 2 or 3 years ago, but you know, I'm 30 now, so now I have to have the grown ass man look.
Time flies, my friend. So as we said, you are now the co-host of the morning show in Columbia, South Carolina. So give us the pulse of the South Carolina fan base. How are the Gamecocks looking as we approach football season?
Oh, Adam, the buzz from last summer to this summer they're completely different worlds, right? Like last year in Dallas at Media Days, we're talking about this team that's coming off of a 5-7 season, essentially wasting the best year or the best quarterback the program's ever had in Spencer Rattler. And it was pretty dire. I got so many questions last year at Media Days as to whether or not Shane Beamer was on the hot seat. And now fast forward a year later, Lenora Sellers has like the best 6 weeks to end the season of any quarterback in college football. They became the hottest team in college football. They have that dramatic win at Clemson, and they were on the doorstep of the college football playoff, just short of it. But like the buzz around town and the excitement for this team is it's pretty fun. There's a buzz in the town about the Gamecocks this year. A little bit of, hey, we're still South Carolina. We've seen the worst case scenarios for teams that we're really excited about happen. There's still a little bit of pessimism. But for the most part, guys, it's been football season, let's just say the last couple months, considering how bad the baseball team was. I think people, usually in South Carolina, the spring is all baseball all the time. And we couldn't talk enough football this past spring.
Elijah, what did you know about Lenora Sellers before last year?
Before last year, so Lenora Sellers at South Florence High School, which is maybe an hour up the road, depending how fast you drive. Also the home of the only Buckeyes in South Carolina. But at South Florence High School, he was a legend. He was one of those guys that he's bigger, faster, stronger than everybody else. And if you watch his high school tape, it's cartoonish. And you almost wonder, why wasn't he more highly touted as a recruit? I mean, he was a 2-3-star recruit coming out of high school. He was originally committed to go play at Syracuse. And really, he's been really open with, you know, the decision to, you know, decommit from Syracuse and go to South Carolina was incredibly difficult, despite getting an opportunity to stay home. So there was a lot of intrigue around him as to whether or not, like, everything that he did in high school translates to the SEC level. And it took a little bit. Last year, guys, it was a disaster that first week. They played Old Dominion. They only won by 4. I think he was about 9-14, if I remember correctly. But he only threw for about 114 yards. And for that, after that week, it was, oh, boy, we don't have a quarterback. This is an issue. And then everything happens after that. Now he's talked about as a top-5 pick in next year's NFL draft, maybe number one. And it's funny to think about that now compared to where it was last year, where every question I was asked doing radio hits was always, what do they have in Lenora Sellers? And I said, well, it should tell you this, that last offseason, South Carolina did not go into the portal to get a quarterback. Not one that would legitimately challenge Lenora. They picked up Robbie Ashford, but Robbie Ashford really struggled at Auburn. They brought him in there to push him, but they loved that kid. Before he ever took a snap as the starter, that coaching staff raved about Lenora Sellers.
Elijah, we were talking about earlier in the show, The Athletic took on the Herculean task of ranking all 136 projected starting quarterbacks in FBS. And Lenora Sellers came in at number 3. And here is the scouting take from Dane Brugler of The Athletic on Lenora Sellers. Quote, "This sounds hyperbolic, but Sellers might be the strongest quarterback I have ever evaluated. He isn't a one-dimensional quarterback by any means, but his superpower is the way he creates conflict for defenses with the ball in his hands, shrugging off contact and making tacklers miss. Hopefully we see more A to B to C passing reads in the Gamecocks offense in 2025 because the raw talent is there for Sellers to compete for QB1 status." Do you take any umbrage with any of that scouting take from Dane Brugler?
And where would he need to take another step forward, Elijah, to get to that point?
I completely agree with that entire evaluation of Lenoris. And a lot of it is like the stuff that you can't teach, right? Like Anthony Richardson got drafted purely on traits. It didn't translate to a football field, and the numbers were atrocious for Anthony Richardson, but he got drafted on those traits alone. Lenoris has those traits, and he's way more accurate as a passer. He's way, way more improved at taking care of the ball a little bit. Like, he might be the hardest player to tackle in college football. I remember going to cover the game at Clemson, and it's the first snap from scrimmage for South Carolina. He drops back to pass, and 3 Clemson defensive linemen are surrounding him, and that place gets loud. And I've never heard a place go from that loud to that quiet that quickly. Because as soon as he seemingly was wrapped up, he broke 3 tackles in the backfield, then runs up the field for a 20-yard gain and gets into Clemson territory. It's one of those just jaw-dropping things when you see it. And there's, and you guys saw it at Vanderbilt last year. There was that one play where he seemingly, you know, sacked by two guys in the backfield, scrambles out and finds, you know, Jared Brown 45 yards down the field. He's got a lot of just those jaw-dropping, wow. I don't want to completely draw the comparison to Cam Newton, but Cam Newton did a lot of that as well. And there are a lot of similarities in what they do. And in terms of what Lenoris needs to do to kind of elevate that and kind of secure his spot as the number one quarterback in the draft next year, that intermediate accuracy. He's got a great deep ball, and he has an absolute bazooka for an arm, and he's really accurate with it. But from 10 to 19 yards, still need to get a little better. He still barely completes a little over 50% of those passes, and sometimes last year you would see, even on like timing routes and crossers, he would be a little bit behind or throwing, you know, to the wrong shoulder or not necessarily hitting a receiver in stride, and a lot of that can be fixed with footwork. And I think one of the things that's going to benefit him this year is Mike Shula being the offensive coordinator. I think Dow Loggins did a fantastic job last year, but he's the head coach at Appalachian State now. But Mike Shula has done a really good job working with quarterbacks. And if you remember, I mentioned the Cam Newton fella earlier. His offensive coordinator for the Carolina Panthers for his MVP season was Mike Shula. So I think Mike Shula's got a lot of really good experience working with the type of quarterback that Lenoris Sellers is. It can help him bridge that gap when it comes to that one particular thing he needs to improve upon.
We're talking to Elijah Campbell, 102.5 The Game alum, drafted and developed by Chase McCabe. If you want to say it, now doing his thing, morning shows over on The Game in South Carolina.
He did it all on his own, Willie.
Oh, Chase popping in there.
He did it all on his own.
Yes. Chase did some developing. Everybody needs coaching.
I just gave you hugs when you needed them.
And I do like hugs.
That's part of the development process. Yes. Elijah Kama talking to South Carolina Gamecocks with us. Now, as you mentioned, they really got into the discussion about the playoffs. It was really close. So what does the rest of the roster look like, Elijah, and if you look at their schedule, is it realistic they could get in there?
Ooh, the schedule's a bear. I mean, it really is. And that's where my hesitation on saying playoff, you know, and going full Jim Mora on you guys. But the question marks on offense, like, they got Rasul Faison from the transfer portal, who's an 1,100-yard rusher at Utah State, but there's also a question with his eligibility. He applied for that year of eligibility in January. Fellas, it's mid-July, and they have no answer as to whether or not he'll be ruled eligible or not. So they had to go into the portal again as a backup plan in case Faison's not cleared and pick up Isaiah Augustov from Colorado. And they've got a couple returners in the running back room, but none of those guys have ever been a leading carrier for their college football team in their careers. So that's a question mark. They have some new guys on the offensive line. I like who they brought in on the offensive line in the transfer portal, and they also have an freshman All-American left tackle at Josiah Thompson. So if you're going to have, you know, an A++ at quarterback, it helps to have the guy that's going to protect him. And then defensively, I mean, they had, what, four players drafted in the first 45 picks of the NFL draft, and replacing those guys is going to be really tough. And they're doing it mostly through the portal. So if they can at least stop the run, that's my biggest thing with them. If they are good run stoppers and they're not getting gashed on the ground and you force teams to have to throw the ball, their secondary is good enough to force a lot of turnovers, and they'll win the turnover battle most games. And if that's the best case scenario for this team, is that they stop the run and Jalen Kilgore, another guy, potentially a first round pick in next year's NFL draft at corner, who led the league in interceptions last year in the SEC. If they're able to do that, be opportunistic as they were last year on the back end of that defense, I think Lenoris Sellers is going to help you enough. And then, of course, I did all this without mentioning, they probably have one of the, what, two or three best edge rushers in America with Dylan Stewart. He's not draft eligible this year, but that's a guy that's going to be a top 10 pick in the 27 draft. He's got the eye of NFL mock drafters across America right now. So they have the quarterback, check. The guy who rushes the quarterback, check. A coach who prides himself in player development and getting transfers in to buy into the message early on, that checked out as well. So if those little things happen, like stopping the run, and you can get Rasul Faison as a running back to be eligible, then, yeah, that's where things fall right for them, and they can make the playoff.
Elijah, before we let you go, I would be remiss to not ask you about Shane Beamer, who is the least favorite person in the world, according to – it was Robbie Stanley's least favorite person in the world.
Oh, Robbie.
Robbie constantly refers to Shane Beamer as a goober. That is the word. That is the word that Robbie uses to describe Shane Beamer. So defend your boy, Elijah. Is Shane Beamer indeed a goober?
There are some goober qualities. He is very emotional. He wears his heart on his sleeve.
Almost got
totally
into a fight at the bowl game.
Oh,
last
I remember
year.
This. Yes,
and he was in the wrong on that one. In public about saying, you know, maybe faking the T sign, while it might have been legal, also still might not be cool in terms of just like the, you know, the unspoken rules of football. But Shane does, his players would run through a wall for him. And I think really that's the biggest defense of him, is that he gets guys to buy in and they develop players. In 23, the running back they had starting was a Division II transfer. He ran for over 1,000 yards. They got a Yale transfer in Nick Argiulo. He ended up being a seventh-round draft pick for the Broncos. Demetrius Knight was turned down by almost any SEC school he tried to get into when he was in the portal from Charlotte. He became a second-round draft pick. Kyle Kennard won the Nagurski Award. As a transfer out of Georgia Tech, he went from being a good player at the ACC level to being one of the three or four best defensive players in the country last year. He is a guy that if you love college football and you're into coaches who maybe aren't chasing all the five stars, but guys who develop throughout the course of a program, Shane Beamer's your guy. Oh, also, he let me call the first play of the spring game, and I ran a play out of the wishbone, and it picked up 29 yards.
Oh.
He's a real one for that.
Okay.
So, He's all for having fun. So that's my defense.
Do you hear that, Robbie? Just he let Elijah call a play in the spring game.
But did they have the wishbone as one of your choices, or did you install the wishbone so you could run that play?
It's funny. I found a play online because I wanted to run a play out of the wishbone. I want to do the goofiest thing humanly possible if they're going to give me this power. So I was going through wishbone plays for 3 hours, and then I stumbled upon one on YouTube that Texas ran against Iowa State in, I believe it was 2010. It was the first game after Daryl Royal died, and they ran the first play of the game out of the wishbone, and it was like a wishbone toss back to the quarterback, like a pitch to the running back, toss back to the quarterback, and hit a tight end about 20 yards down the field. Worked to perfection. I saw this, and I'm like, oh, this is the jackpot. So I meet with Coach Beamer during his coach's show that was at Backstreet's Grill in downtown Columbia. And I said, Coach, here's the play. And I showed it to him. And then I diagrammed it. And he laughed and goes, all right, next commercial break, I'll call Mike Shula. We'll install it. And they installed it that morning, didn't practice it. Lenora Sellers told me he nicknamed it Further, because that's also like their whole theme for the year. So they had a name for it. And they broke it out in the first play. Almost got blown up. I'm not going to lie. The pitchback was suspect. That thing almost, you know, was overthrown. But then Lenoris caught the pitchback, threw a rifle to Jordan Dingle, picked up 29 yards, and I can now say that my play-calling career average in terms of yards per play is 29. Dare you to find another offensive play caller with that average.
That is a sterling average if I've ever heard one. Elijah Campbell, former member of 102.5 The Game, forever a member of 102.5 The Game, now the co-host of the early game on 107.5 The Game in Columbia, South Carolina. Elijah, great to catch up with you, my friend. I'm glad you're doing well. Hopefully we'll talk soon.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to get to be on with you guys and to listen to you guys. You guys are doing a fantastic job, and it's really cool to get to be on as a guest after sitting behind that soundboard. Shout out my man David James as well, sat in that same chair. So it's a fun moment. I appreciate it, guys.
Of course. Thank you, Elijah.
Awesome.
Good
Thank
stuff.
615-737-1025. We'll wrap up the show next. Willie Donick, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, The Game. D. Mace Vingan and Donick, 1025-1063, The Game. Willie Donick, Adam Vingan here with you. Chase and Big Joe coming up next, live from Atlanta, as SEC Media Days concludes. Our coverage has been sponsored by Brewhouse South. Experience Nashville's ultimate sports and brew hangout at Brewhouse South in Cool Springs. Derek Mason will be back on air later today with Jake Lyman from 3 to 6 today and tomorrow. And tomorrow we will take some time to honor our good friend Derek Mason ahead of his induction into the Tennessee Sports Hall of Fame. I do want to read a couple of text messages from our resident Shane Beamer hater, Robbie Stanley. We just had on Elijah Campbell from Columbia, South Carolina. I said to Robbie, I asked Elijah about your favorite goober. He said, oh, I heard. And I said, and? Robbie says, too much defending the gooberism from Elijah. And I said, but he let Elijah call a play. He goes, that part is pretty cool. So maybe Robbie has softened.
And it was a play that wasn't from their playbook. Like, he drew up a play
he
from
installed,
the wishbone.
He installed the play. So, but great to hear from Elijah, who was a producer at this station, did some on-air work as well, now co-hosting the morning show in Columbia, South Carolina. So
I do think that's one of the cooler things about our existence as a station. We have developed a lot of good talent from the ground up. We are a success story from there.
So here's a story that I did not get to earlier that I teased, so I do want to get to it now. Yesterday, Brett McMurphy, veteran college football reporter, who I guess now works for On3.com.
He's good.
He wrote this from Atlanta. The Big Ten will not back off its preferred college football playoff format, guaranteeing the league 4 automatic qualifiers unless the SEC decides to add a 9th conference game, sources told On3. Quote, there's no way Big Ten Commissioner Tony Petitti moves off 4 AQs, a source said. With the Big Ten continuing to support the 4 AQ format and with the SEC unlikely to add a 9th conference game, the 12-team playoff will likely continue for the 2026 season. From a source, quote, we're staying at 12 teams in 2026 unless something moves, end quote.
Honestly, don't we need to give the 12-team thing a little time before we rashly move it up to 16? Is that, what do you want to see? What do people want to see? I'm okay with 12 for a while. Let's just go with 12 for a while. What's the hurry to go to 16? Let's chill. That's me anyway. I'm okay with, let's look at how the tournament, how the committee selects. Strength of schedule needs to be more of a discussion. Let's work on that part of it and how we get to the best 12 and how to seed the best 12. Those are the discussions. Growing it quickly to 16, to me, is a rash decision. And I agree. Here's another part of this. Why should any league be guaranteed? I don't care how good your league is, how good you think your league is going to be every year, but why would you guarantee 4 teams from a league? That's dumb. Earn your way in. It'll work itself out. If you get 5 or 6, that's fine. But you can't guarantee 4 if 4 don't deserve to get in. That's wrong.
Matthew in Nashville says, Eli Drinkwitz, is that how you pronounce his last name? Drinkwitz?
I think so.
He wants 30 teams in the college football playoff.
Come on, man.
30!
Come on.
I saw this tweet that was retweeted into my timeline by Jared Stillman, who is not working today, although he is technically working, I guess, because he was on the radio earlier today. From On3, Missouri head coach Eli Drinkwitz pitched a 30-team college football playoff with play-in games. Quote, now you're talking about an opportunity for 30 teams, 30 fan bases to be excited and engaged in giving revenue. You've got 30 teams with players who have access to compete for championships. So for me, I think that makes a lot more sense. Why don't we just give everybody a friggin' participation trophy at this point? This is why I don't like the NCAA men's basketball tournament potentially being expanded. 64 teams was always the right amount. I live with the 68 because you have a couple of extra days of first four action, and those games tend to be relatively exciting. But that's just dumb. Brett McMurphy says, quote, last month I reported conference commissioners had decided to start over, quote unquote, on determining the 2026 CFP format. The Big Ten and SEC initially wanted 4 AQs each, with 2 each to the ACC and Big 12. The ACC and Big 12 pushed back, while the SEC coaches later publicly did not support the 4 AQ model, instead preferring the 5 AQ plus 11 at large format for a 16-team playoff. However, there is no chance, quote-unquote, a Big 10 will support the 5-11 format, a source said, as long as the SEC remains at 8 conference games. Because the Big 10 only plays 3 non-conference games compared to 4 for the SEC, the Big 10 feels it's at a disadvantage if the selection committee picks 11 at-large teams.
But that depends on what the selection process entails. That's where we need to focus the discussion, is to have better metrics, better understanding of the metrics, what teams need to schedule, whether you have 8 or 9 conference games, what should the schedule mean? And I think the 5 and 11 is a better way to go. I would love to see, if you go to 16, another way for another little guy to get in there. I want that element in. If we're going to go to 16, there should be another little guy in there, not another big guy. And this is where I don't like the power that the Big Ten and the SEC hold over all of this. It's not best for the game. It's being run and influenced too much by the people who hold the cards, and that's what Greg Sankey even used his analogy. We have a good hand. Well, no, duh. Yes, I know you have a good hand, but let's try to be careful how we wield the power, and let's look at the game as a whole. They can't do that. They won't do that. It's all about the money and looking out for their own conference. But guaranteeing four teams from a league, that's not how it should work. It's not how it should work. It should naturally happen.
They need to either poop or get off the pot with this.
At 12 for a while. That's my advice.
What's the deadline? December 1st?
They're not going to listen to me.
They just need to poop.
December 3rd, I think, is that right?
I think it was December 1st.
Maybe. Yeah, okay.
At the beginning of December.
Way. Yes.
They need to either poop or get off the pot with this. I'm tired of hearing about it. They just went to 12. I agree. Let's give 12 a chance. Give 12 a chance.
And the SEC is not going to go to 9 because the Big Ten is leveraging them to do that. They won't do that. And essentially, that will keep it at 12, right?
Yes. Oh, man.
And that's okay. Let's keep it at 12. Let's research how this 12 thing is working after a couple years before we jump to go to 16.
It's never enough, Willie.
It's never enough.
Everybody needs more. And they need it
it's
now.
It's not good.
No, it's not good.
It's not good for the game. Just like the extra wild cards in baseball are not a good thing. Even though it helped my Mets get in last year. Didn't forget that. But it's just not the right way to do baseball postseason.
Quickly, before
too many
we go.
People.
Before we go. I do have a piece of advice for all of you listening. If you're having an affair, don't go to a Coldplay concert. Don't do it.
Where? What arena were we in?
I don't know where this is happening, but it's gone viral. Apparently, the CEO of a company was outed for having an affair with his HR chief after they appeared on the big screen, by coincidence, at a Coldplay concert.
Woo.
Big lesson learned there.
We started the show by me recounting a couple of wonderful nights I had watching Depeche Mode. I've also had a couple of wonderful nights watching Coldplay, and I never saw anything like that.
By the way, Coldplay is here next week.
All right.
So if you're having an affair and you live here,
lay low.
Don't go to the Coldplay concert.
Or go, but just be aware that you could be on the Jumbotron at any time.
You could be outed.
Chris Martin, isn't that what he did? He said something, right?
I haven't heard it. I've only seen it.
Like he would, he made motion. Hey, this guy's having a great time up here, or something.
So,
right?
So they pointed to him on the Jumbotron, and he said, and then as soon as like they did that, they hide their faces. Yeah. He said either they are very nervous to be on screen or they're having an affair.
Well, he was right about one thing.
They're really nervous.
Indeed. So I'm just saying, I guess Coldplay is here next week. So if you are living here and you are listening to this and you are having an affair, don't go to the Coldplay concert or don't make it so obvious when you're at the Coldplay concert.
Prepare accordingly.
That's my piece of advice. That'll do it for us today. Chase and Big Joe conclude their coverage of SEC Media Days from Atlanta. We will be back tomorrow at 9 o'clock one more time. On behalf of Derek, be loved, love on your people. Have a wonderful rest of your Thursday. Peace.